Welcome to the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. In 1948, a Virginian became the president of the University of Florida, just as thousands of World War II veterans took advantage of the GI Bill to become college students. At his inaugural address, J. Hillis Miller rattled off statistics about Florida and its marquee land-grant university. A scratchy recording of the speech survives today in the university archives.
The state of Florida has a population of between 2.5 and 3 million, 53% of whom were born in other states.
Remember, this was 1948. Miller lays out the mid-20th century case for investing in public higher education and argues the growth of Florida's economy and ambition required new state investment.
The conditions of being high in ability and low in effort to support education will not make a great state.
As Miller made his case, he pointed to what were then leading industries: tourism, citrus, paper manufacturing, and cattle ranches. Arguably, he foresaw the post-war real estate boom that was just beginning to reshape Florida, setting it on a path to today as the third largest state in the country, one of the fastest-growing populations, and one of the fastest-growing state economies in the nation.
And there will come a time when man will master this great state in other respects and turn more of her natural resources and her unlimited natural attractiveness to his own economic and cultural gain.
Back in 1948, UF had more than 8,000 students and had seen enrollment increase more than tenfold in just 2 years. That was the post-war boom. The new president then, J. Hillis Miller, laid out a clear but ambitious goal for the fast-growing state university.
To build and maintain a great university that can take its place among the 10 or 12 great state universities of the country is a monumental task and a grave responsibility. Anything less than that stature for the University of Florida would place the state itself in an inconspicuous place among the great states of the Union.
Remember, that was 1948. 70 years later, the school is tied for number 9 on the U.S. News & World Report's ranking of top public universities in the country. Miller's goal now has been updated by the current president of UF, Kent Fox. He says they have their eyes now set on becoming a top 5 recognized public university.
Not only are we finally achieving a goal, but it does bring a certain amount of attention to the state of Florida. And I firmly believe that with a state that is now number 3 in population, we want to be thought of as a state that values higher education, as a state that leads in higher education, and in all of the aspects of higher education that come with, say, a research university, which includes scholarship and publications and an impact on the economy. And so that attention for our state and that perception by those that live outside of the state is, I believe, really important. And you see that importance when you think about attracting companies to the state of Florida, such as this competition of bringing the second headquarters of Amazon to our state. It's important that those making such decisions understand and have a perception that the state of Florida is a place that leads in higher education and indeed has universities that are among the very best and compete with the very best, public or private.
Fox grew up in extremes. He spent much of his childhood in Alaska, but his family moved to Dade County by the time he was ready for high school. He graduated from Killian High School before leaving Florida for college and his academic career. He's a computer scientist by training and has a Master of Divinity, so a technologist and a pastor. His tenure at UF began as the school was beginning to enjoy the benefits of being declared a preeminent university by the state legislature. 2 years before his appointment, state lawmakers approved a bill opening up additional funding for state universities designated as preeminent based on a dozen metrics such as freshman retention, graduation rates, and spending on research. UF has used the millions of new dollars of preeminent funding to hire more than 100 new faculty members over the past 3 years. Spending, Fox says, helped the school increase its national ranking. Florida has been heavily investing in its state universities. It has been a key priority for Senate President Joe Negron. This fiscal year, the state support for higher education increased an average of just 1.6%, according to the publication Inside Higher Ed. That's a national number. It's the slowest growth in at least 5 years. But funding in Florida, it grew the most, up 11.3% to just around $5 billion, a 50% increase in 5 years.
I think we sometimes don't quite realize that, because there are some years in which the state's not able to invest and other years invest more. But there are other states, including places where I've lived, that have been systematically disinvesting. And the impact of that is two things. One is they have to raise their tuition dramatically. And the public universities and colleges in our state have not done that. They've held fast on tuition. So that
sometimes that's been statutorily imposed on your institutions as well by the legislature and the governor.
Yes, and in my mind, that is fine as long as we're able to get the resources that we do need to meet growing costs and to raise our excellence. And
so if not from tuition, then from other state sources.
Exactly. So our students don't have to pay for it, but indeed the state is making that investment. And the state's been able to do that because its economy has really been on a roar since the recession.
What's that return on investment for the taxpayers? Because ultimately it is the public dollars that are flowing to the universities like UF.
Yeah. Well, the return to the taxpayers, not only are the relative excellence of our colleges and universities going to be stronger than our competitors outside of the state. And as an aside, I really believe our competition is outside of the state, not within the state. It not only is our stature growing and being enhanced, but also people, this becomes now the destination for people to come get an education from outside of the state. So not only is the quality of education and the quality of research growing, but also this has become the place where people want to come get an education. That was not the perception in previous decades. Not the perception, and we have to continue to confront this perception that the South or the southeastern part of the United States doesn't value higher ed, because we have evidence now that is not the case, that indeed we are competing with the very, very best. So it becomes a destination. And it also, lastly, in the area of research, it means that more dollars from outside of the state, primarily from the federal government, but also from foundations and corporations, flow into the state and is used to provide salaries to faculty, to grad assistants, and in partnership with companies that want to partner with these universities. So there's a real tangible economic benefit as dollars flow in, as companies are started, and as existing companies come to the state and they benefit from the work and the products of these universities, which include students and they include the output of the research.
University of Florida President Kent Fox. This year, Florida spends the fourth most of any state on higher education. It's behind California, Texas, and New York. And two very different higher education budgets have been proposed for the next fiscal year. One would cut a couple $100 million out of the budget. Another would add about that much. So, still to come, our conversation with the UF president continues, talking tax money and spending on higher education.
In the short term, I'm always concerned. In the long term, I'm really incredibly optimistic about the state's future in terms of its higher ed investment.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Today, it's our conversation with the president of the University of Florida. There's 1 month left now in the Florida legislative session, and about a $400 million difference between what the Senate would like to spend on higher education in the state and how much House Republicans would like to cut from spending on universities. It's a big gulf, no doubt about it, but the Republican leader of the Senate, Joe Negron, doesn't see it that way.
In my experience working on the budget, the differences between the House and Senate are very manageable and expected and pretty routine.
The leader of the House Subcommittee on Higher Education Spending thinks the growth in state funding should slow down compared to recent years. Representative Joe Ahern from Pinellas County wants the universities to use unspent tax money from past years' budgets.
The slowing of growth in this silo is both reasonable and necessary.
Some of the unspent money has to be set aside as a rainy day fund, though. Kent Fox has been through a few of these budget cycles as president of the University of Florida. His time at UF has corresponded with new state spending on universities. State tax dollars going toward universities has increased 21% since the 2015 school year. Fox isn't worried yet about a slowdown in state funds or even a net decline in how much the state sends to UF. State spending and finding school funds is where we pick up our conversation with the University of Florida President Kent Fox.
This is my fourth year to be involved in a legislative session, and my first couple of years when I heard about the differences or the initial budgets proposed by the three branches of our state government, I was really concerned. But I've come to learn that over the process of discussion and negotiations, usually these issues get worked out in a way that are beneficial. Every year we've had, in my 3 years so far, we've had certain areas that have been funded that actually have been cut, and then we've had requests that have been denied. But given all that, the long-term view of the state's investment is one in which I think is not just positive but phenomenal in all areas across our colleges and universities. So I have in the short term I'm always concerned. In the long term, I'm really incredibly optimistic about the state's future in terms of its higher ed investment.
Certainly the last several years, the university system has benefited from increase in funding, including the preeminence designation from 2013 and so on forth. The House proposal to cut $200 million from the university system, how significant would that be? What would that mean for an institution like the University of Florida if a proposal like that would gain enough traction and support with lawmakers?
Oh, if it actually came to fruition, it would be devastating because it would undo all the work, much of the work that we have been able to be successful in raising the stature. And for us, the investment is very simply two things. It's in hiring faculty to come to the state of Florida and to grow the research portfolio and teach students. And then secondly, an investment in what we call graduate programs, building the stature of the College of Law and Business and Medicine and the PhD programs. In higher education, one of the unique aspects of it is that it takes a lot of time to create momentum, to create reputation, to create rankings, and yet that can be undone pretty fast. And we see that in other states, including in areas of the Midwest where I'm from, and I believe you're from as well.
We went to school in Illinois. I went to school in Iowa.
Yes, yes. And in Illinois, where I studied and worked at the University of Illinois, a wonderful, dear university, has really suffered over now several years from the state disinvesting. And it's just heartbreaking to see that, one of our nation's great universities now losing ground. Such cuts are, you as a university, the vast majority of your resources are invested in people, and it would mean fewer people involved in this mission that we have.
In other words, layoffs, in addition to stopping the kind of hiring that UF has done with the preeminence designation from a few years ago.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
And would it then potentially put more pressure on tuition and fees in order to make up or look for places to make up for that revenue?
Yep. Our social contract with our students and everyone is that as long as the state is investing and allowing us to compete with the best public universities elsewhere, we will not raise tuition and fees. But if the state...
Have you put a price on that support from the state? In other words, the kind of investment you need for the state in order to keep tuition levels flat?
Yep. So for us, again, our goals are to become one of the nation's top five universities. And so that means we're competing against University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, University of California, Berkeley, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, University of Virginia, and then the fifth university everybody argues about, but some rankings would say it's University of California, Los Angeles, and you could pick your favorite fifth. I'll leave that one open for all of us. But to do that, it really means that our faculty, we need a similar student-to-faculty ratio to those places. We need a similar compensation for faculty and staff and graduate students. And it also means that we internally as a university need to bring philanthropy. This is not something the state can help us with, but it's something we need to do at a similar level to those universities. We need to have our faculty bring in grants and contracts at a similar level. So much of the work in getting to that level is work we have to do. But there is a contract with the state, and so we look at the amount of funding that we get, which is a combination of state plus tuition plus state dollars per student. We have about 50,000 students, and we are just
the state now. Portion of that right now is what, about $14,000-$15,000 per student for the University of Florida?
Yep, and our tuition is $6,400 for a full load in an academic year.
So we'll call it about $21,000-$22,000 per head.
Yep. At a private college or university, it would be two to five times that amount per student, typically, all based on tuition. And at the best public universities, be slightly more than what we have now. But we've made a lot of progress. We compare ourselves against what's called the AAU universities, and of those 30 plus universities, that funding per student was at the bottom. It is now in the top 10. With us not in raising tuition at all, and we have the lowest tuition of any of them.
How do you look at that tuition figure, as there's been legislative and gubernatorial efforts to freeze that?
Yes, my concern with having a legislative effort or even a policy that permanently freezes it for the long term is we cannot predict the economy in the future. We cannot predict the makeup of our elected officials. You know what their perception will be on higher ed, and the combination of the state and tuition is not something we get to control, and therefore I think it's best to allow future leaders to be able to determine what that ratio should be and not have in place laws that would affect it when we can't predict what the economy will be or what the needs will be. So I think it's best to let leaders at the time decide between that ratio of tuition and indeed state investment.
The university has identified a number of legislative priorities that come with a multi-million-dollar price tag, including, I think it's $76 million to invest in faculty, to invest in lecturers, to invest in scholarships as well, and $50 million or so in infrastructure, new building projects. Where do you see as sources for that revenue to fulfill those priorities?
Yep. Our request, as you mentioned, for recurring funds for people and programs is exactly as you described, to hire people and to support those that we have now. And then the infrastructure, our requests are actually larger. They're in the almost $100 million because of what we describe as deferred maintenance on our aging buildings, as well as requests and investment in other infrastructure. One is recurring, one is one time, but they're both important for a university of our size.
The construction of a new building focused on data science and information technology, a one-time cost, but then you got to maintain that building as well as fix other buildings on campus.
You absolutely do. So that when the state actually has, all of us in this state are very fortunate compared to many others in that the state has has been very judicious in its budget and its expenditures in the past. We don't have a huge liability around pensions that some states do, including the Midwest, like I mentioned previously. So the state is blessed with a budget that we can't predict the economy clearly, but from all expectations is growing, and therefore the state, we believe, has the resources to meet its needs across the spectrum, not just University of Florida, not just higher ed, but in other areas. So I think with the appropriate amount of wise decision making, the state is going to be able to meet its needs in this area. And there's a responsibility we have, and that is in terms of resources, and that is to even grow more our philanthropy. So we're in the midst of a campaign to bring gifts to the university to support the very same things. I believe it's a partnership with the state that we will invest in infrastructure and people with philanthropy as the state invests. And then also the funding their faculty are bringing through competitive grants to federal agencies, competing with other states, other universities outside of the state. We closely monitor that, and we have a plan to grow that from nearly $800 million a year up to $1 billion, and that benefits the state.
On the philanthropic side, that has been yet another place of friction with some lawmakers that have identified university foundations and the reserves that those foundations can enjoy through alumni giving as places that ought to be tapped before state taxpayers increase their revenue toward higher education. Is the foundation at the University of Florida a place that, in your estimation, can be a source of new revenue and should be a source of ongoing investment in the university, different than what it has been currently used?
Well, we, as part of our fundraising goals, we have targeted areas across the institution. All philanthropy in the end is guided by the wishes of the donors, so we don't ultimately control where those gifts will go, whether it's a foundation or whether it's an individual or sometimes even a company. The University of Florida, and including actually all of the state universities and colleges, actually were not at the same level of philanthropy historically as many of our competitors outside of our state, primarily because we're relatively young.
Right.
I mentioned the University of Michigan. It's 100 years older than University of Florida. And then when you get to University of North Carolina, University of Virginia, they're 200 years old. Virginia is founded by Thomas Jefferson. So they had a big head start on us, and they have a tradition, as do many private colleges and universities, of philanthropy. And ours is pretty recent, and that's true across higher ed in the state of Florida. What philanthropy does is allow you over decades, over generations, to create an endowment that provides stability in certain areas. And it's actually more than just the resources. It becomes a point of prestige and visibility. So when you, for example, name your college, or you endow a chaired professorship, then that is actually a point of visibility and prestige nationwide. And that is important when you're thinking about raising your stature. And just to give you some specific numbers, our endowment is, with the upturn in the stock market and all of that over the past year, it's roughly about $1.7 billion. That's the endowment. 99%, but in the high 90s percentage, it's all restricted to certain things based on donors' wishes, a student financial aid, all good things, but restricted. I can't go spend it on something else. That's a lot of money, but you compare that to who we're competing with. University of Michigan has an endowment of $10 billion. So it's just, and that gives them a sense of stability, and that's why they're able to be successful in a state where the population is shrinking and the economy is suffering. And that's why we have to focus on having our foundation be successful. We're investing not in the present, but in the future through the foundation.
University of Florida President Kent Fox. While the university system, including UF, has experienced a boom in state spending, community colleges have not, setting up friction between universities and state colleges. That's still to come as our conversation continues.
I am optimistic that in the long run, the investment will be in the spectrum of higher ed.
This is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening to WLRN. Today we're featuring our interview with the president of the University of Florida. Most college students in Florida do not go to universities. They go to state colleges. Those are what used to be called community colleges or junior colleges. Traditionally, they offered two-year degree programs and technical training, but they've grown into four-year institutions offering full bachelor's degrees in some majors. Miami-Dade College dropped community from its name in 2003. Broward College did it in 2008. It happened in 2010 for Palm Beach State College. Now, those three together represent half of the enrollment in state colleges throughout the entire state. But they complain that while state universities have enjoyed a sharp increase in state funding, money going to state colleges has dropped off. Kent Fox, president of the University of Florida, acknowledges the funding split, but wouldn't say whether he thinks it has contributed to an inequity of higher education in Florida.
It should not be that we take resources from one part of higher ed and give it to another. I really believe that we need to invest in higher ed broadly, and that each of our institutions has a mission that we should focus on and then be the very best in succeeding in that and fulfilling that mission. Compared to peers elsewhere outside of the state of Florida, and I believe that indeed it will be the case. We have that amazing example here in Dade County with Miami-Dade College, and then our own county, Alachua County, with Santa Fe College.
Broward College is another one of those. Indian River Community College, Palm Beach State Community College, although they've dropped the community college name, certainly.
Yes, yes.
But I want to get back to this point of state funding, because the state funding for universities has grown considerably, whereas the state funding in the last legislature for state colleges was cut. Has that contributed to an inequity when it comes to higher education in Florida?
Well, there has been a differential in the past year or so in the investment. There are certainly waxing and waning and surges and over time, but I am optimistic that in the long run, the investment will be in the spectrum of higher ed, and particularly in helping each of those institutions fulfill their role. Even within the state universities, we have a different role than, say, the University of North Florida, which is a great partner in the Jacksonville area.
When you talk about state colleges fulfilling their mission, should that mission include four-year degree programs as it has grown into over the past several years?
Well, I don't want to second-guess decisions that the state made when I was not here.
Right.
It was quite different when I actually graduated from the Dade County Public High School system in 1973. But I know that the best information I have is my partnership and friendship with the president of the state college in the Gainesville area, Santa Fe College. And they, for example, have introduced a small number of bachelor's degrees that in no way compete with ours, but they just provide a different kind of setting and a different kind of mission that we could not provide. So we, at the University of Florida, for example, for more than a decade, have not increased our undergraduate enrollment, even though the state's college-age population has grown a lot. And we are not going to increase our undergraduate enrollment. So that means that there needs to be other colleges and universities that meet that need. And secondly,
sounds like state colleges could fulfill that role by growing a four-year degree program.
I think in the right areas. I think we don't want to replicate or duplicate and create redundancy that's not appropriate. But I think in the right areas, and I know in our partnership with the colleges in our area of upstate New York, I'm comfortable with where that is.
Do you think the legislature has a voice in deciding those types of programs?
Well, the legislature can decide almost all aspects of our future, and I pray that God gives them wisdom to do that in a wise way. But you know, and much of that burden though is on us as leaders of our colleges and universities, and just making sure that our elected officials and their staff are well informed about indeed what the return on investment is, and secondly what our real goals are for each of our institutions and the mission we have.
There is a legislative effort. Essentially, it would limit the number of juniors and seniors at state colleges to 20% of the student population. Right now, I think it's roughly in the single digits. So there's still a lot of space there. Is that a type of governor that you could support as state colleges continue to explore these degree opportunities?
Well, I certainly know that we, even at the University of Florida, have capacity in this third and fourth year, which we don't have in the what we call freshman, the first year and second year. And we're, as I mentioned, we're not growing our undergraduate population, but that limited growth is in the freshman, the first year, the sophomore, the second year in college levels and classes, which are at capacity, and we're not going to change that in terms of student population. But we are creating new pathways where students can come in, including more transfers, including more students pursuing online and then coming to the residential campus there in their latter years. So I certainly understand and would endorse, you know, having programs that provide a pathway to the research universities where the first few years might be at another campus or even online.
But I suppose the proposal from the Senate leadership is to limit the upperclassmen and women, is to say state colleges can only have a certain percentage of their student population that are in four-year degree programs by limiting the percentage of population in years 3 and 4.
Yeah. And I think that is intended indeed to do this, to have more of those students go on to the part of the state university system.
What about the effort to return to the community college branding? There's that legislative effort that has existed. It may seem linguistically small, but the state colleges have really embraced this phrase of state college, not community college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every state has a different terminology in referring to their higher ed system, which includes what we would call universities and colleges. All I ask is just that we be consistent and
so you'd support continuing the state college moniker as opposed to reverting back to community colleges?
Yeah, I'm comfortable with what it is, and if it changed, to be honest, I'd be comfortable as well.
Is there a racial or ethnic factor in this friction that has existed, at least at the legislature, regarding resources for state colleges and resources for the university system? And what I mean by that is the state colleges in Florida serve a great number more students than the university system does. And a majority of those students are minority students. Certainly that's the case here in South Florida with the state colleges. It's not the case for the universities. How does that influence this friction between state resources of state colleges and universities?
Mm-hmm. Well, first I would just say I as a leader of the University of Florida, do not believe that there is friction between the institutions or between the University of Florida and the state college or the University of Florida and the other state universities. I certainly understand overall that there are constrained resources and that the state legislature has to decide how to divide up that pie. But my big goal is that we grow the size of the pie overall. Secondly, it's really true that the state colleges, depending on where they're located in our state, and even the state universities, serve different populations, not only have different missions, but have served different populations. So the student population, the demographics of the state colleges here in South Florida is different than even the state colleges in North Florida, North Central Florida. And that's even true of the universities. So FIU's population does look different than the University of Florida's, and there are, for example, more students who are working full-time and then attending Florida International University. And I love the fact that the high school graduating students in our state can choose which kind of university or college they want to go to, assuming they can get into these universities and colleges, depending on whether they want to work full-time or whether they want to be at a purely residential campus, which is pretty much what we are at the University of Florida. So indeed, there is it, and I think that impacts also the demographics. And we at the University of Florida are proud of our diversity, but we're not as diverse as we intend to be in the future, and we're not as diverse as the colleges and universities here in South Florida.
How does an institution like UF go about achieving that ambition of diversity when looking at, for instance, the resources that are supplied by the state government, which tend, again, to favor the university system over the state college system?
Well, for us, it is simply in the way that we think about issues like financial aid and recruiting students. It also applies as we think about how we recruit faculty, just being intentional. Now, we're not allowed to use race as a factor in our admissions, but we certainly use other factors such as economic diversity. So we have programs for those students that come from families whose total household income is less than $30,000, where they can come and be a part of what we call the Match in Florida Opportunity Scholars Program, which is a wonderful program, not just of a full ride financial aid, but also incredible support and mentoring and ability to support those students who, within their families, they're the first generation that's ever gone to college. And that is life-changing when you have a generation of a family that starts to go to a college or university, and then that will affect almost certainly generations after that. And so that's what we do in terms of our admissions is to focus on recruiting in the high schools across the state, from the spectrum of privates through the most diverse publics, and then secondly having financial aid that is what I call, it's merit-based, but it's need-aware. And I think that's the area, for example, that our state could make a greater investment is in the area of need-aware financial aid. We have amazing merit-based financial aid with Bright Futures, for example, and Florida Prepay. But there is a real need for us to grow the financial aid that's based on merit, but is also aware of the need of the students.
University of Florida President Kent Fox. Now, merit-based scholarships is one difference in higher education spending plans between the Florida House and the Senate. The Senate version would expand the Bright Futures Medallion Scholarship to cover 75% of tuition and fees. The House budget, though, would keep it close to half. The Senate bill would also boost the Bright Futures Academic Scholarship Program to pay 100% of tuition. Still to come, as our conversation continues, we turn to Greek life on campus.
Greek life is certainly on notice nationwide.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson. Today, it's our interview with the president of the University of Florida. Last month, UF suspended the Tau Epsilon Phi fraternity for 4 years. UF joined at least two other state universities in taking action against Greek life on campus this school year. Florida State suspended Greek life for a time after the hazing death of a 19-year-old male pledge in November. 9 members of a fraternity involved face charges. Then in January, FIU suspended Greek activities for a month after a series of anti-Semitic and sexually violent messages were traced back to a fraternity. This is FIU President Mark Rosenberg last week.
Greek life in this country is hanging by a thread. And what has happened is absolutely unacceptable. University presidents have an obligation to step up.
The University of Florida took its action after members of the Tau Epsilon Phi fraternity were found to have violated 5 student conduct codes, including serving alcohol to minors and illegal drug possession. UF President Kent Fox wouldn't address the specific case, but says there are higher expectations for student behavior by members of fraternities and sororities.
They have a higher level of responsibility and a higher level of accountability than the other students. It's not fair in some sense, but it comes with being a member of that Greek system. And therefore, when they misbehave as part of a sponsored Greek event, they have to be held to higher standards and have higher level accountability than the average student body would be. And so if they're involved in hazing, if they're involved in the abuse of alcohol or other illegal drugs, then the consequences, I believe, need to be more severe because they are a model.
Fox says he was not directly involved in the decision to suspend for 4 years the Tau Epsilon Phi chapter at UF.
In my mind, there's not a single bright line that if you cross it, you're going to be suspended, or another line, if you cross it, you're going to be banned. But it has to do with what we believe is the not just an incident, but the response of the fraternity to that incident, the matter of whether behavior is continually repeated across multiple generations of students, and also the immediate safety members of that fraternity or the people that they're engaging with.
Mark Rosenberg at FIU has also taken action because of Greek life activity imposed on a fraternity. In fact, he told us last week that Greek life in this country is hanging by a thread. That's what Mark Rosenberg told us in Tallahassee. Do you agree with that assessment? Is campus Greek life hanging by a thread?
Greek life is certainly on notice. It nationwide. At the University of Florida, we've not had an incident of a death recently. We've not had an incident of that would rise to that level. But all of our Greek chapters have taken notice and have been working hard to change and preempt and prevent any incidents for the future. So we've benefited from the, in some cases, unfortunate incidents elsewhere, but where the leadership there has said it's unacceptable. And so therefore we put our system on notice as well.
How does the university monitor some of that activity, some of which could be happening in private homes off campus?
Yeah, it's in full disclosure, it's totally impossible for any of us to monitor on a 24/7 the behavior of 50,000 students. And I'm sure there are things that occur amongst any set of 50,000 college-age students that would not be acceptable if we found out about it. But we really can, number one, be very public and continual in our declaration of what is appropriate and what's not acceptable, both of those standards, and then make sure that we expect and welcome reporting by members of the Greek system and outside of it when they see incorrect behavior, and it's something we expect that behavior to be reported. It used to be that people didn't want to rat on their brothers or sisters, but now the understanding is that gradually, and this is changing, people, this, all students are beginning to understand that part of being responsible is also sharing when people cross, when they have behavior that's inappropriate. And so that is something we encourage as well, that this is what's right. It's not wrong to report inappropriate behavior. It's actually what is necessary and expected, and it's good.
University of Florida President Kent Fox. Last fall, he found himself in a different controversy, the center of the debate over hate speech from a white supremacist at a campus facility. He's now rethinking the school's policy of renting out halls if UF has to pay the price for police protection. That's still to come.
We're then going to have to bear the full cost when we follow the federal law. That's just not sustainable.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy and our interview with the president of the University of Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. On Thursday, the University of Florida got a $300,000 refund from Alachua County, where Gainesville is located. The county had sent the school an invoice for that much money for police protection in October when white supremacist Richard Spencer spoke at a university hall. It was not a school-sponsored event, but a group had lawfully rented the space and paid the $10,000 fee. This was UF President Ken Fox's reaction when he got the bill.
I actually was disappointed and surprised when we did receive from our own county a bill of over $300,000 for the security that they had provided. We had dozens and dozens of agencies, some state agencies, Florida Highway Patrol, and some of our universities, Florida International University, sent campus police up there to help us, as well as members of law enforcement from South Florida and around the state.
Broward County Sheriff's Office sent the university an invoice as well for law enforcement services during the Spencer speech. BSO's charges are almost $52,000. The school says it will review the bill, plus any others, for appropriate costs since the speech was not a UF-sponsored event. Now, the university's policy has been to allow outside groups to rent its facilities, but Fox says if the school will be financially responsible for events it does not sponsor, that policy may change.
Up until the time the county sent this bill for $300,000, I was opposed to changing our policy, even though this individual's renting of the space was incredibly disruptive to our campus, cost us, as well as many others, a lot of money. But if we're then going to have to bear the full cost when we follow the federal law, that's just not sustainable.
Fox tells our sister station in Gainesville, WUFT, that if all the outside law enforcement agencies that helped out build the university, the cost would be over $3 million. You can follow us on Twitter, at WLRN. Also look for a podcast of this program by searching Sunshine Economy on iTunes. Pilar Ribe is our technical director. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.